Good morning. Ladies and gentlemen, our first case for argument this morning is India Brewing against Miller Coors. Mr. Kay.
May it please the court, Nathaniel Kay and my partner Dan Vaccaro on behalf of the appellant India Breweries. India Breweries signed a contract to brew Miller-branded beer in India, the fastest-growing beer market in the world. Miller made it impossible for IBI to perform. The district court erred in granting Miller's motion for summary judgment as Miller, not IBI, breached the artfully drafted license agreement. The district court's errors were threefold. First, the district court held on pages 27 and 28 of the decision that it was commercially unreasonable to force IBI to buy a brewery before Miller inspected, but then proceeded to state that is what the license agreement required. The license agreement says nothing about this situation, and it is evident from the decision, as Judge Clevert fails to cite to the license agreement in that section of his decision. Judge Clevert's opinion that IBI should have either bought or entered into a contract to purchase a brewery before Miller had to inspect is irrational and commercially unreasonable. In fact, if we had bought a brewery first, it's likely that Miller would have said, "Why didn't you ask us first?" The commercial purpose was not for one party to buy breweries solely to please the licensor. The issue in that section is what would the parties have done if they had sat down to decide the issue? What is that gap? The parties clearly did not sit down and say, once these first two breweries are rejected, what happens now? Judge Clevert also errs in his decision because he suggests there are two classes of breweries. In fact, there's only one class of brewery for the purposes of inspection, all of them. The district court held that Miller did not breach the license agreement because it did not have any duty to approve a third-party brewer such as Rajasthan and Hemneal. The error, though, is that neither Rajasthan nor Hemneal were going to be third-party brewers. Rather, IBI specifically instructed Miller that it intended to purchase one or both of these breweries and thus asked Miller to come out to India to inspect. If these breweries were owned by IBI or its joint venture, then they would not be third-party breweries. Finally, the district court errs where it suggests on page 23 of the decision that Miller could refuse to allow IBI to contract brew and that Miller could withhold the approval unreasonably. First, IBI was not going to contract brew. It was going to be the owner of the brewery. Second, the fact that the license agreement uses the, quote, will not withhold approval unreasonably language does not mean that Miller could unreasonably, for non-IBI-type breweries, withhold approval. As this court knows, every contract has both a good faith duty or good faith and fair dealing. Unless the contract specifically says, for any other breweries, we can withhold approval unreasonably, you can't assume that just because it doesn't directly say that for a non-IBI brewery, that in fact is what happened. Now I want to turn to what Miller says. Miller first says it doesn't have to inspect any breweries at all. This flies in the face of the express language of the license agreement. As this court is aware, you are to interpret a contract so as to not render any of its language superfluous. The license agreement specifically states that for every brewery where a licensed beer is to be made, quote, IBI, and then in parentheses, after consultation with an inspection by Miller, will conduct, and it goes on to take a commercial scale test brew. Miller's bold statement that an inspection is not necessary renders the language in the parentheses superfluous. Moreover, the argument is frivolous. First, a Miller executive, Tim Cochran, wrote a letter in March of 2002 IBI in response to IBI's letters of January 11, 2000, saying, we've identified a couple of breweries. His response was, everyone agrees that an inspection of Rajasthan is necessary for Giorgio, meaning Giorgio Sega, the only person at Miller who could approve a brewery for a foreign licensee. Everyone agrees that inspection of Rajasthan is necessary for Giorgio to gain Miller's perspective. Miller's argument also is frivolous because Giorgio Sega, the only person at Miller allegedly with the power to approve a foreign licensee, stated that it didn't matter what type of equipment was present, Didn't matter who built the brewery. None of that matters. Every single brewery he has to inspect and approve. Pictures don't count. Video don't count. A written letter saying what's there doesn't count. He had to go and approve. Miller's actions in refusing to go out and inspect breached the duty of good faith and fair dealing in the contract. At a minimum, it was a condition precedent for Miller to go out. Now, Miller's statement that they don't have to was their right rather than duty. Either way, based on both Giorgio Sega's position and Tim Cochran's position, even if it was a right and not a duty, they still should have informed IBI. We're not coming out. We don't have to come out. No, instead they say, we all agree it's necessary for Giorgio to gain that from Miller's perspective. But instead, they start making demands that aren't contained in the contract. There is a point in a contract where when the parties, it's not clear what was occurring or what the parties wanted to do, that the parties have to, at some point, sit down and figure out what they want to do to make this venture successful. In Market Street, there is a great quote that Judge Posner put in that opinion. The parties to a contract are embarked on a cooperative venture, and a minimum of cooperativeness in the event unforeseen problems arise at the performance stage is required, even if not an explicit duty of the contract. That's at page 595 of Market Street. And the reason that's important, Your Honors, is clearly everyone thought the first two breweries that were owned by IBI's joint venture partner, Mohan Meakin, would be sufficient. They flew out in October of 99. Mr. Sega rejected them. That was his right. He had the ability to look at them, make that determination, and then reject. But then what? What happens at that stage? Once those two breweries are rejected, now what? It's whether the party sat down and figured that out, it was a minimum duty of Miller. Miller didn't even have to pay for the plane ticket to come out. In paragraph 2.4C of the license agreement, it indicates that IBI has to pay for Miller's inspections because it was not just going to be one inspection. It was going to be several. They were continually coming back. And that's actually how Giorgio Sega and all of the other foreign licensees operated. Inspection is not an event. It's a process. You go out, you look, you see what you like, you tell them thumbs up, keep doing things well. If it's not what you like, you point out the errors. You say, this is what's right, this is what's wrong, fix it. But that's not what happened here. Giorgio Sega specifically said, I'm not going back. And at that point...
Counsel, if I understand the record, what he said is, I will come back when IBI certifies that this brewery has the equipment we require. Now, there isn't very much point to showing up and then finding that there is required equipment not there, right? So what is the basis of your assertion that Miller was just saying, we're not coming back, period. We don't care what equipment there is. That just doesn't seem to be what's in the record.
Well, Your Honor, in the record, I did put in Giorgio Sega's deposition. I also put in the deposition of Bill Berg. Bill Berg was the executive who had overall control for Indian market, Asian market in India. He said, I relied on Giorgio Sega. And when I asked him, what did Giorgio say? He said, Mr. Sega said he wasn't going back. Now, what he may have put in a letter is one thing, but what he said contemporaneously after visiting, he said, I'm not going back. In the letter, Your Honor, they do specify, we want to know if this equipment's there.
They specified terms for going back.
Correct, Your Honor, but the contract doesn't say that there are terms for going back. It says every brewery.
Counsel, what is the point of going and inspecting a brewery if the required equipment isn't there? Suppose India Brewing demanded that Miller come out and inspect an auto manufacturing plant. And Miller replied, you know, this is a good plant for making autos, but it doesn't make beer. Let's go and inspect beer-making plants. In your view, would that be a breach of contract?
No, Your Honor, because it says every brewery. It's not a brewery. An auto manufacturing facility is not a brewery. I'll give you a better example, Your Honor.
The problem, however, would be that the auto manufacturing plant didn't have the equipment Miller required to make Miller's beer.
But it's not a brewery, Your Honor, and 2.5 says every brewery. So unless they somehow said, well, it's really a brewery, it's not. Your Honor, the way the foreign licensees worked, and this is a very specific point, this was the only contract that Mr. Sago was not involved at the get-go, and he was upset. Every other licensee he would visit before the contract was signed, fix this, change this, do that, and it was a continual process. This was the first one where the contract was signed, and his boss said, handle it.
I don't see what any of this has to do with my question.
Well, your question, Your Honor, what if it doesn't have the equipment? It was an auto manufacturing plant. Every foreign licensee did not have all of the required equipment when Sago went to visit them. It was a process of fix this, change that.
I don't understand what that has to do with my question. My question has to do with whether, under the contract, it makes sense to say that there is a duty to inspect a plant before IBI certifies that the plant is capable of passing an inspection.
Your Honor, I don't know if any plant, and it wouldn't be for me to say, it would only be for Mr. Sago after a visit, whether any plant could ever, on his first visit, pass the inspection. He had the ultimate decision as to whether it did or did not.
Look, you're just filibustering. I give up. You're not dealing with the question I asked. You may be dealing with the question you wish I'd asked.
No, Your Honor, I think under the contract, they have a duty, the way it was drafted, for every brewery where beer was to be produced or wanted to be produced, for them to come out. And the only thing that it required...
To come out any time IBI asked them to?
Yes, Your Honor. For where they wanted to brew a licensed beer.
Regardless of whether the mm-hmm. brewery was ready to go or on the brink of this scalable commercial test?
Yes, Your Honor, because, again, we're talking the contract is signed in September of 99. It's a 16-month period. It's not a very long time period. So
if IBI had asked for a monthly on-site visit, Miller would have had to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the difference, though, Judge Tender, is that if someone from IBI or from Miller had come out and said, yes, we think this brewery can move in that direction, now you've got to put in piping, now you've got to potentially change equipment, you've got to train personnel.
Yeah,
and at that point, the contract does
Miller
have monthly.
What said is, when you do that, when you make the changes that we already know are necessary, we'll come out and inspect. Your argument seems to be that if Miller had sent an inspector and had said it doesn't have the following five things that it absolutely needs, IBI could have demanded that the inspector come back 2 days later with the same five things missing, and then come back 2 days after that. And then come back 2 days after that.
That's not the argument I'm making. Because
yes, it is the argument you're making, because you're saying that Miller must send an inspector even if it knows, even if everybody agrees, that it does not have the equipment needed to brew Miller beer.
No, Your Honor, because once they've proffered a brewery, they've made the inspection. For example, the first two breweries that were owned by Mohan Meakin, Mr. Sago said, here's what's wrong. IBI at that point could say, yes, we admit it's wrong. We are going to make those changes. We are going to spend the money. Or they could say, which what they did in this case, no, we're going to move to somewhere else. So I don't think, in your example, they could say come back in 2 days. Once they identify what's wrong, our choice is to fix or move on.
I don't understand why not. What's going on in this correspondence is that IBI identifies a plant, also concedes it doesn't have equipment Miller requires. And having conceded that the plant lacks necessary equipment, IBI now wants Miller to send an inspector. I don't understand why that wouldn't be equally true the day after the inspector leaves.
Because
the plant still lacks the equipment, and IBI demands that there be an inspection.
Because they've already identified what's wrong for them to move in that process of proving.
Exactly the point which you're not coping with.
Well, Your Honor, then if that's the case, then what about the Arctos Brewery? In January 11, 2000, the executive vice president of IBI sends a letter saying, we've identified Rajasthan. We're also thinking about Arctos. Here's the equipment list from Arctos. Is there anything missing? It was identified. And Judge Clavert indicated that we waived that. We never waived or gave up. We never abandoned Arctos. We were told you, Giorgio Sago, would prefer you pursue Rajasthan. Why? It was not Indian-built brewery. It was a European-built brewery. And it had previously brewed Stroh's. But we never gave up on Arctos. So under your scenario, Judge Easterbrook, we specifically said, here's the equipment there. Tell us what's missing. And it's not a question of there's a specific piece of equipment that you've got to have a Kronos spinning machine or you've got to have this. It has different names, different equipment. Mr. Sago would go through that and say, I think this can work. I don't think that could work. So we did identify a brewery. We did provide equipment list. And they still refused to come back out. Judge Clavert indicated...
Actually, before your time expires, we need to talk about another issue that I should have brought up initially. And I wonder whether there is appellate jurisdiction in this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
The jurisdictional question has to do with the fact that Miller filed a counterclaim. And Miller counterclaim appears still to be live. Right? They're trying to play fast and loose by dismissing the counterclaim with leave to reinstate as soon as the appeal is over. But we've got quite a lot of precedent about that, saying that doesn't work. That's just game playing. So why is there appellate jurisdiction here?
Your Honor, I see I'm in my rebuttal time. May I answer the question?
Yes.
Okay. The court had asked us back in December of 2007, they cited the Horowitz versus Alloy Automotive. The reason we have jurisdiction and the reason Horowitz is not applicable is both parties still had active claims in Horowitz. But the district court there encouraged them both to dismiss without prejudice so the appeal could be decided on a particular issue. Here, IBI had no claims left. And Miller, in dismissing its counterclaim without prejudice, cannot come back and assert those claims unless this district court, as it should, reverse the district court's summary judgment decision.
Counsel, are you familiar with our decision in National Inspection and Repairs about a couple of months ago? Because it dealt with this set of facts precisely.
Your Honor, I'm sure I've read it. I don't recall the exact facts.
There's no appellate jurisdiction in these circumstances unless the party that filed the counterclaim dismisses it with prejudice.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know about the fact of that case, but I do know in Pyramid Electric, this court held that the test is not dismissal with or without prejudice. Instead, the test is whether the district court has finished with the case. In essence, does the decision of the district court end the litigation on the merits and leaves nothing for the district court to do? The answer is yes. Miller cannot come back. If this court affirms the district court, this case is done. Nothing else can occur.
But, alas, if we remand, case is not done. As I say, that's the circumstance of National Inspection and Repairs.
Correct. But Miller may not.
Counsel, you don't really want to argue with the Court of Appeals about the meaning of its own opinions, especially if you haven't read them.
I know I've read the decision, Your Honor. I don't recall the facts of it at this point in time. But again, Miller may not reopen. They may decide. I mean, the claim they are on, the counterclaim they were asking for is rescission. And with that, I'll save my rebuttal time.
Mr. Sampson.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You need to lead off with jurisdiction, Mr. Sampson, because you're the one playing games.
Your Honor, I will take that comment in a convivial spirit. I will say, first of all, that I have not read the decision that Your Honor just referenced. I can also say, however, that we agree with IBI that there is appellate jurisdiction for this case.
There is no appellate jurisdiction in this case. That is the holding of National Inspection and Repairs. And there are predecessor cases in this court. What National Inspection and Repairs adds is that appellate jurisdiction can be created if the maker of the counterclaim dismisses it with prejudice so that it's dead, dead, dead. Otherwise, the case has to be finished in the district court. So my question to you is, are you willing to dismiss the counterclaim with prejudice?
May I ask a question in reply?
Pardon?
May I ask a question in response to that, Your Honor? And the question is this. May I make the argument that Miller would like to make and then consult with our client, and then having consulted with the client about this decision and what Miller might want to do about it, may I then inform the court about Miller's decision?
Certainly. And this will be your only chance to make an argument on the merits if you end up dismissing with prejudice. But unless the counterclaim is gone, this case simply cannot be appealed.
You have made that point crystal clear, Your Honor.
All right. Please All right. proceed.
Your Honor, we believe this is a case about managing business risk. This license agreement involved brewing the beer in a faraway place. It involved brewing beer in India. Miller had never brewed beer in India before. And so it set up this license agreement in two segments. There were preferred brewers, as the district court identified them, and then there were other brewers. That was consistent and important to Miller. It knew who IBI was, it knew who Moen Mikan was, and it knew who IBP was. They were the preferred brewers. It had no idea whom IBI might contract with on a third-party basis. They were the other brewers. These risks were seriously different, and so the agreement speaks to them differently. The district court believed that was the case, wrote its opinion accordingly. IBI doesn't agree, but we believe they're dead wrong, and we believe this court should affirm the district court. I'd like to speak next to several points that were made in argument by IBI. We disagree with them as well. Two of them are importantly factual. IBI contends in this argument that this is not a case about how the license agreement deals with third-party contract brewers. Instead, it is a case about owned brewers because IBI said it was going to own Rajasthan and Hymnil. The record doesn't bear that out. And the important document is IBI's own letter of November 7, 2000, in which Mr. Judge says to Giorgio Sega, India Breweries has now entered into agreements with India's two finest breweries, allowing us to start immediate contract production of Miller brands. These agreements also allow India Breweries to purchase these breweries if a mutual agreeable price can be reached. So IBI is simply mistaken about the facts underlying this central point. They are also mistaken about the suggestion that Miller should have told IBI that they did not need to come out and inspect. That is part and parcel of IBI's argument about whether there was a duty to inspect or a right to inspect. The court knows that in IBI's own summary judgment response, IBI identifies this as a right to Miller that it can waive, that's at page 10 to 11, and not a duty. But there are two important reasons why IBI is wrong about this concept of needing to tell somebody what's in the contract. First of all, it's not the law. Judge Posner, in the very Market Street case that IBI cited,
it doesn't make any difference who writes the opinions of this court. They speak for the court.
Your Honor makes a good point, and I'm wasting time. Your Honor is familiar with that decision. The second reason why IBI is mistaken about this is that IBI itself agreed with Miller that there was no need to inspect until there was a satisfactory equipment list showing that the brewery could brew Miller beer. And that, Your Honor, is the letter of April 11, 2000, also from Mr. Judge, in which he says, in response to Giorgio Sega's requiring equipment lists, quote, following receipt of the report, and this is the Rajasthan equipment list report, and assuming the brewery meets your standards, we will then proceed with the arrangements for your visit to inspect the brewery. So on the facts here, these points are mistaken. The factual record here, as in so many different locations, wholly undermines the arguments that IBI is making. And Artos is perhaps the clearest example of that. Beside the fact that the argument about Artos was wholly waived because it was never advanced in the district court, and was never developed in the district court. The very communication in which IBI first mentions Artos demonstrates that Artos never qualifies as a contract brewery or as an own brewery. The reason? In that very first January letter, January of 2000, when IBI first mentions the name Artos, it identifies it as having a surplus capacity of 120,000 hectoliters. Paragraph 5.1G, sub I, of the license agreement demands that any brewery in this license agreement has to be able to brew 150,000 hectoliters per year. So Artos is completely off the table for a host of reasons. The other thing that IBI doesn't speak to, it didn't speak to it at the district court at all. It doesn't speak to it in its briefing here, and it certainly doesn't speak to it in this argument, is the essential basic point of the relationship between Miller and IBI. The first requirement of this license agreement, if you're going to deal with a contract brewer, is to have a contract brewing agreement. IBI said it had one, not till November, but it said it had one for both Rajasthan and Himnil. Miller, as it had reminded IBI to do in March, that is, provide the agreements, on November 14 wrote back and said, send us the agreements. In the entire correspondence between November 14 and December 31 of 2000, IBI never even acknowledged the request, much less sent the agreements. And so the essential way in which Miller planned to manage its business risk with this far-flung license agreement, namely to actually have a written deal with a third-party brewer, that was never spoken to by IBI. There is no argument that justifies IBI's failure to perform that piece of the license agreement. And that fact, that reality, survives every single argument, well-placed or not, that IBI tries to make in this appeal. And so at the end, what the court has is several things. It has what the district court gave you below. It has the recognition, fundamentally, that the parties negotiated for paragraph 1.2. 1.2 allows Miller to reject the tendered brewery for any reason whatsoever, or no reason. The district court gives you alternative grounds. One of them has to do with the timing with which equipment lists were delivered. They were so late that even IBI's expert agrees no test brew could possibly have been concluded by December 31 of 2000. And the point that we made a moment ago, and the central point on this appeal, if you are trying to manage your risks in a distant location, if you are trying to protect your recipe, central piece of confidential information that you may have, you need to have your licensee deliver a writing that gives you the opportunity to determine whether that risk can be managed, that gives Miller the opportunity to determine whether the licensee has agreed in writing, as other portions of the contract required, that it would protect Miller's confidential information. No such agreement with Rajasthan, no such agreement with Himnil was ever tendered to Miller, no such agreement ever exists. They never had it. All they had was this MOU. Intriguingly, the MOU does have a confidentiality clause. And as the court will recall, that confidentiality clause speaks not to Miller, not to Miller's recipes, not to any commitment to bind the third-party brewer to the confidentiality provisions of the license agreement. Instead, the MOU confidentiality clause says, as among us people who have entered into this MOU, we won't talk about it with anybody else. And so at the end of the day, IBI wholly failed to live up to its obligations under the license agreement. The district court appropriately granted summary judgment in this case, and the arguments on appeal don't speak to the record. They mistakenly speak to record, and they miss this essential point. There never was an agreement. If the court has any further questions, I will be pleased to answer them. If not, we will, Your Honor, promptly address the instruction of the court to consult with our client and report back to you on the question of jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Sampson. Anything further, Mr. Cade?
Yes, Your Honor. A few points. First, Your Honor, you had asked me a question about if they had made him come out every 2 days. I don't think that would be good faith for IBI to demand for Miller to come back out every 2 days if they have, they've told what's wrong and they haven't corrected it. Second, the letters that Mr. Sega writes in March of 2000 saying you're missing the equipment, March of 2000, he starts off with high-gravity brewing equipment, and that's what he ends with in November and December. As the court knows, one of the issues that Mr. Sega originally had said was we don't need to brew at high gravity because essentially it's diluting the beer. It's not permissible in India. The issue regarding Artosit was raised by Miller in the Pro Bowl. So in February, after we've tendered Artos in January, at the Pro Bowl the next month, when IBI was guests of Miller since they sponsored it, they were told, Georgia wants you to pursue Rajasthan, which is the reason why they moved in that direction. A good point was raised that Artos doesn't have the capacity. It was only 120 hectoliters excess. But what was failed to be stated was that brewery was owned by Mohan Meakin, which was IBI's joint venture partner. And excess capacity was of as of that day. Once a test brew is a commercial scale test brew and everything else, they can turn off the brewing of Mohan Meakin's beer and switch over. They were the joint venture partner. Wouldn't they want that to succeed in order to make money? The license agreement itself says nothing about equipment. Nowhere in there does it say you have to have this equipment before we will come out or any of this other stuff. A point was raised about paragraph 1.2. Again, we were not going to contract brew with either Rajasthan or Hymnil, and clearly not Artos because it was part of our joint venture. We were not going to do that. We were going to purchase. So in November, when they write back, here's the memorandum of understanding, we have less than a month to go before the contract expires. At that point, IBI is desperate. They're begging, not just in written communications, but on the phone, saying, please, please, please come out and inspect. And finally, a point was raised about confidential information. Confidential information goes both ways. What IBI was unable to obtain in begging for Miller to come out, they wanted them to inspect. You can't turn around and say to another brewery, you give your equipment list and you identify everything in your brewery, because that's not really confidential, but it is for us. And what IBI wanted them to do is come out, inspect, and then they would have provided that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cade. Mr. Sampson, we'll look forward to receiving within 10 days your answer to the question whether the counterclaim is dismissed with prejudice. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement when that response is received.